Welcome to the Bone Club. My name's Ashley, and I'm with Stephanie and Jenna. Last week, we talked about conferences and field schools. And this week, we're speaking about scientific communications. And we have a special guest this time, Dr. Laura Cirillo. Welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So tell us a little bit about yourself real quick.
Sure. So I had a little bit of an interesting course to get to where I am today. I started out doing a lot of science in high school, got very invested there, realized that was my passion, and I abandoned filmmaking to pursue science in college, specifically neuroscience. But I never got rid of my sort of love for the arts, so I kept it going as best I could in the form of creative writing, journalism, and some more filmmaking in between. And then I went on to get a master's and PhD in biological anthropology. And currently I am a forensic anthropologist working for SNA International in support of the Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency in Nebraska.
Sounds very interesting. So let me ask you, since we are talking about scientific communication, what is scientific communication? What is it to you?
That, I think, is probably the biggest question, because it is it encompasses a lot of things. And it's really, at the heart of it, relaying scientific information. And the form you want to relay that information in is really where you get into the heart of the question. To me, it combines two areas. One is scientific literacy, your understanding of science, your ability to communicate it, to digest it, receive it, and disseminate it. And also media literacy, which is your ability to take in and understand the nuances of communication styles, whether it's writing, listening to podcasts, watching documentaries. Your ability to receive that information, understand the format that it's coming in, and how you can parse through that information to really get to what is solid information, what you think is maybe kind of wacky stuff that you should maybe be ignoring, and get to the heart of the matter in understanding.
Yeah. Stephanie, what do you think?
Yeah, so I'll just preface this for this entire podcast. I'm a little sick, so my voice sounds a little funny, so please bear with me, everyone. But yeah, so Laura and I kind of worked together. As if y'all remember, I also work for SNA International, and she had given us a presentation at work about scientific communication, and so I just found it so fascinating because I know for myself that it's something that I actively try to work on and always try to better myself, and listening to her presentation just made it so clear that I had so much learned, and I thought that maybe everyone else had those questions kind of burning in their minds as well, which is why, you know, we reached out and wanted her to be our, you know, our first guest as our, you know, our podcast to try to broaden some perspective a little bit, so it's not always just us rambling. It's, we get a couple other voices as well. And so I guess my idea behind science communication, for sure, is all of, you know, what Laura had said as well. But also, when I try to think about like my definition for science communication, I tend to try to always think about like, what did I miss out when science was communicated to me? And try to always keep that in mind as well. Because it is, yes, like she was saying, like the literacy and understanding not only the science, but I find a lot of times, sometimes when people understand the science so well, they have a hard time communicating it because like they just get it to the nth degree, and you're sitting there as the layperson being like, what just happened? I'm so lost. And so for me, that was an aspect of science communication that I always try to keep in mind of like, what didn't I know when I was thinking about this topic or when this topic was taught to me? And I guess, which kind of leads into my first question for Laura, is like, most science communication really does have to do with like speaking to your audience in a way that they understand. In what ways do you think, you know, the field as a whole kind of does this well? And what ways do you think that, you know, we might have a long way to improve upon?
That's a great question. I think you really hit the nail on the head in that the first rule of scientific communication is knowing your audience. And knowing your audience does not just mean knowing who you're speaking to, but how to speak with them. You want to meet them at their level, but also push them to grow a little bit. You don't want to talk down to people ever. You want to show them the avenues of where you could be taking that conversation past where they started. And in knowing your audience, you have to know a language to use to communicate with that audience. You know, you don't want to get too in the weeds with a specific vocabulary, especially in science, that's a problem. And that's something I think we don't do super well. I think we have sort of two speeds. One is lay speak, where we use, you know, your elbow and your hips instead of talking about the specific bones involved. Or we have science speak, where we talk about the specific bones involved, and we have nothing in between. And so we're either relying on people knowing nothing or knowing everything. So one of our problems in the field is reaching that audience that's in between, or moving one audience from one end of the spectrum to another. Because I do think communication runs both ways, not just from ignorance to knowledge, but also knowledge to other types of knowledge. Everyone is moving in some direction constantly. So one of the things we could do better is hitting those audiences in between and learning to communicate in different ways. Science is really either verbally taught in a classroom, or it's a major mode of communication is through writing in scientific journals, articles, and those hit certain audiences and they don't hit any of the other ones in between. It's sort of gatekeeping science in a lot of journals that people don't have access to or have inaccessible language. And then gatekeeping it also in the form of having to be a part of higher education to be a part of the conversation. So there's a lot of ways to communicate in between. One, you are doing perfectly well today in the form of a podcast. That's something that hits a lot of audiences. People can join in a sort of conversational mode, which is really helpful for a lot of people to get interested in topics and feel like they can be accessing the information and know where to go with it from there, not just being talked at, but talked with. Then there's a lot of different new media, you know, YouTube, streaming. There's people who are talking to audiences more frequently and at a more accessible level. Filmmaking, other forms of audio, writing in a more creative format is something I think we could really be diving into that we don't. So we have a sort of rigid approach to scientific communication now, and those are the areas where I think we have the most room to grow. But there are some things we are doing well. One is, I think, especially within forensics, we have a lot of interest, and we've kept it interesting. We've kept it hot. We've kept people wanting more. So that eagerness and driving up the excitement in your audience is something that we are really good at. Maintaining it, something we can work on a little bit more. But those are what I see as the major highlights and disadvantages for our field.
No, I really appreciate that. I mean, I couldn't agree more. I don't know if Ashley or Jenna, y'all have any, you know, more things that like y'all have seen the field do well or not well.
Well, I mean, for me, the not well is in the language. And there's something that you brought up, Stephanie, that I know I'm very guilty of. And that is my supervisor tends to beat me over the head quite frequently when I write something. And she tells me, you know this. No one else does. So you need to write it like no one else knows this. And that's something that I'm always guilty of, is that I'll sort of start my paper at the middle and forget no one's been working 10 years on this project other than me. So how am I supposed to make this those minor steps in the beginning that I leave out, how do I include those? So how do you overcome that in writing and in communication, that sort of starting the story from the middle?
That is a problem. I think there's two aspects to that that are important to consider, and I'm wondering if you guys have experienced these things. First is that communication is not a one size fits all approach. The communicator needs to be conscious of who they are and who they're perceived as. When you're a junior scientist, when you're younger in the field, you have to also take the opportunity to prove yourself to a certain degree for the audience to take you seriously. That's also true of certain minority representation in the field. A lot of people, whether it be female, gender diverse, POC, there's a lot of different people who will have to, unfortunately, represent themselves in a way that is taken seriously with authority. Because some of us aren't given authority just for existing. And so, in doing that, you have to remember that you are the expert on what you're discussing and how to communicate that well in a manner that's received well is a big issue. Then you said starting the story in the middle. That's something that I have also struggled with a lot. But my creative writing background, I think, was the most helpful way for me to think that through in creating a narrative arc. I want to lead my audience through the arc of a story and tell a story when I'm communicating things to them. Even if it's a dry scientific matter, there's still a beginning, a middle, and an end. And I know where I want the end to be. So, even when I'm starting in the middle, I have a vision of where I want to get them to. And that's the same place that I am. And so I have to remember, how did I get there? How can I help lead my audience there? And I do write it out of order. I write where I want to be in the end. I dive into the meat of the middle. All of the nitty-gritty in between, parsing through what's important for them to know, what's something that I can sort of gloss over and lead them in a way. And then remembering, where did I start and how can I introduce something to somebody who's starting in that place too? I can't forget where I started from. Otherwise, I'm not going to very effectively bring somebody to where I ended up. Is that something that resonates? Is that something that feels like is how you approach communicating things too, or is this a weird quirk that I'm bringing in?
No, I love that. I probably should start doing that. I didn't do. I guess I'm very. I have a very linear thought process, which I, sh so I'm always like, okay, where did I start? Where am I going? And I like try to start from the beginning and just write the whole paper or the whole presentation or whatever. But that it does make sense to kind of work backwards of like knowing your end goal helps you not have so much jumbleness, I guess, at the beginning. So that's, I mean, that makes me think a lot about like how I've definitely given presentations where I tend like a, I guess a critique of sometimes when I give presentations is I just like give a lot of information. And it might be because I do start from the beginning to the end when like maybe the beginning stuff doesn't, not all of it mattered, I guess, for that end point. So that's a it's a really good, gonna have to rethink how I do things.
So do I actually. I mean, I'm like Stephanie. I'm also very linear in the way I write. The way I tend to write is I'll go days, months, weeks, no writing, no writing, no writing. And then I'll sit down and I'll write an entire journal article in one sitting. And it's just, I start from the beginning and just once the words start coming out, they start coming out. And just go, 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 go.
My brain goes so very differently. I have ADHD, so I tend to go in one direction and then veer off sharply and then veer into another direction, and I'm all over the place all the time. The one way that I have tried to adapt, as I'm really lucky to have a parent who I still live with, who has a philosophy degree. And she is really, really good at trying to get me back on track. I can get really excited or obsessed with other topics as well, and I'll like kind of go too far into it. And so she is good at bringing me back and being like, okay, no, but what did you mean? And so I think that's a perk that I have that not everybody has access to, but I think that might help improve the sciences if we were, I mean, it's always good to be multidisciplinary, but also in just sharing the way that we write. And so I have my philosophy major mother read through my paper and tell me if I've explained it to the point that she can at least follow what's going on, even if it gets a little too sciencey. Yeah, I don't know if we think that might be a way to help or
I think so.
relay.
I think looking at our related fields, our neighbors, our academic neighbors, if you will, is a great way to do this because we are communicating to those people as well, hopefully, ideally. So how they communicate, or how they're receiving our information, like a parent would, or any other person that I mean, they could come from any background and can tell you that didn't make sense to me, or yeah, that sounded really great to me, or whatever in between, and give you some guidance on how your communication is being received. I did my undergraduate thesis from a linguistics perspective, looking at a journal article and the sections, introduction, materials and methods, results and conclusion, discussion, and looking at the types of language were used in these different sections and how it was received by our academic neighbors, through the form of people that were citing us outside of the field. And I looked at things like self-reference in the form of pronouns like I and we in academic or scientific writing versus the sort of removed third person approach, and noticed that there were trends in the introduction and the discussion section where self-reference and a sort of first person approach was really appreciated, it seemed, by these other fields. And that's something that we're not taught in our field and is not something that is really promoted, I would say. Some people even might beat it out of you in your education. So you have to remember that your audience is more than your advisor. Your audience is more than the person who's giving you feedback on a specific presentation that you gave. And seeking that feedback from a variety of audiences, because diversity is really the thing that's informing what we do. That diversity will give you a better understanding of how to adapt your brain, however it may work, into a form that other brains can receive, more than just a single person.
No, I'm totally glad you said the thing about like first person and stuff like that, because my graduate thesis was talking about, cognitive bias and like how the person has an impact on not only the science itself, but how it's communicated and all of those types of things. And that was one thing I had to have a discussion with my entire committee to be like, I want my entire thesis to be in first person, because how can I talk about, us as scientists having an impact on the science while trying to remove myself subsequently from that science? Like, that didn't make sense. And like, I had a long discussion, and luckily they were very receptive to that idea. But it was, I know, having written some articles prior to not in first person, trying to write in first person was really difficult, where you're like, this shouldn't be this hard, but I'm the one that did this thing. But it really is, because you're so used to reading so many articles that are not written in that way. And so you feel like, oh, I'm not as scientific, I'm not as like, I'm not writing as smart or whatever. When in reality, you're like, no, that I did these things that matters. Like, yeah,
Yeah, that's
I'm
really
glad you said
interesting.
that.
So it's more well received when you use personal pronouns.
In related fields, it was the most highly cited articles had some sort of personal approach to the introduction and discussion sections. So those were the areas where people, audiences were interested in hearing your perspective. Materials and methods and results, they wanted sort of a hard science classic approach. They wanted you to deliver information impartially, I suppose, and sort of a traditional presentation. But in the introduction, they wanted to be told some of your perspective, to be led a little bit into your work. And then in the discussion, they wanted to hear from what you specifically learned rather than just regurgitating something as if it happened in front of you and you just witnessed it but had no part in it.
That's really fascinating. I feel like that also would translate better in terms of forensics when you end up on the stand, if you ever were a witness, that you do have to speak specifically to what you did or what you and your constituents did. So that's really interesting.
I feel like we're all just sitting there like, wow, so much to think about, right? I guess kind of along those same topics, but another question that I was kind of thinking about when prepping for today's podcast was just like, what do you find works best for you to prep for presentations or communication styles? Like, do you memorize your whole speech, or do you just have guiding points, or and I think probably to a certain extent, everyone's a little bit different, but since you seem to be very good at this science communication, I feel like we could learn a lot from how you do things.
That's very flattering of you to say. I consider myself a work in progress, for sure. But that work in progress, I guess, is sort of my philosophy also. I consider it sort of a muscle that you need to train and you need to constantly work at to build. And that confidence or comfortableness in speaking is something that you develop with time and practice. It's not something that, I mean, maybe there's some rare individuals that just are born with an innate ability to communicate. But I think for the most part, the rest of us all have to really work at it. How you work at it is definitely individualized. I think my approach is to be comfortable with the material enough that I can speak off the cuff about it, because you never know the direction a presentation is going to go. You never know what kind of question you're going to be asked. That's not something you can script. But I definitely rely earlier on heavily on a script. I think when you're starting, that's okay. You need to practice, you need to get comfortable with moving through material. And if you have to read, that's totally fine. When witnessing a presentation given by somebody that's completely read off of a script, 100%, I don't look down on that in any way. I think that person has taken the time to craft that script with their knowledge, to make that into something that they think is worth sharing and then delivering it rather than it being something that they're not doing in real time. They've done it. They've done the work there, and they're delivering it to the best of their ability in that moment. And so that's something I really appreciate. And it's not something I'll ever tell people that they shouldn't do. There's a lot of people who say, oh, you need to memorize something. You need to go off script. But I see no problem with using a script. I do like it when it's a little more loosely organized. I think you should have points that you want to hit. You should know the direction that you're going with. You should know your narrative arc, your beginning, middle, and end. But the way you're getting into the meat of those sections can be something a little more creative, a little more interactive, something that you feel out with your audience in real time. That I do really love. So preparation is something you can't avoid. There's always going to be some element to that. The question is, do you want to prepare bullet points and let the rest sort of naturally flow in between? Or do you want to prepare your whole script and be ready to move off of it at any second? Because again, you never know what kind of question you're going to get. That is not something you can prep, but you have to rely on your knowledge and know however you think you can communicate that knowledge best. And that can change from presentation to presentation. There's some topics that you might have a lot of numbers that you have to deliver, and those things should be written out. I don't think anybody should be sitting down and memorizing. I think it's a waste of time. I think there's more important things that you can be focusing on than concerning yourself and worrying through memorizing a bunch of statistics. I think you can always rely on things like that to be scripted. But when it comes down to the heart of your presentation, that's something that comes just from you. That comes from your personal experience. That comes from your interest, your enthusiasm. And those are things that will come out whether you script it or not. So those things will always be present. But again, practicing until you feel comfortable and you feel ready to share those aspects of your presentation is all you can do at any stage.
I would say, and feel free, Ashley and Jenna, I know I keep asking a bunch of questions, so feel free to interrupt me at any point. Do you find, like, prepping for a presentation, do you tend to do that on your own? Or do you, like, give a, you know, a fake presentation to, like, a group of people before you give, like, the actual presentation? I know at work a while back, like, one of our mentorship meeting things, I think, you had talked about giving, like, this was more for articles, but I think it works for presentations as well, of like giving them the opportunity to critique it in front of you and you kind of just like listen.
Yeah.
I guess, do you mind like talking more about that? That way like, our
sure.
audience knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And then like what you find that does well for you in particular.
Yeah. So that I call workshopping. That comes from my creative writing background, where we would put together pieces of writing and you would distribute it to a group that you're workshopping it with. They have the chance to read over it, make any edits or suggestions that they're interested in, and then they have a conversation about it that you listen to, but you don't participate in. So you get an understanding of how your work is being received and what is hitting home with people, what's not landing, what do people want more of, what are people less interested in. And I find that extremely valuable because your instinct is to sort of stick up for yourself in moments, to be like, no, 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 that's not what I meant. No, you're misunderstanding that. Or, you know, you get a little sensitive about aspects of your work. But it's really great to step back and just hear how it's being received. Because your intention can be X, Y, or Z, but if people are reading it as something completely different, then your intention meant nothing there because it's just not how it's being received. And you have to remember to step outside of yourself in order to get that kind of information. So workshopping is something that you can bring to any type of communication, really. It doesn't have to just be writing. Although it's something that I think writing benefits very well from because people can digest it in their own time first. A presentation can be done in a similar style. You can give a rough version of the presentation, step back and let people tell you those things. You'll have to maybe guide them through it a little bit, ask specifically what worked, what didn't, what did you think of this, what did you think of that? But don't lead them in that conversation. Receive the natural information as much as you can and take that for your next iteration. I don't often give full versions of a presentation. I sort of workshop ideas or aspects that I want to hit on. And that's more conversational. And I like that approach. I think if you're feeling uncomfortable, if it's your first presentation that you're giving, that would be a great time to give a rough draft and get some feedback on it. But as you get a little more familiar with the concept and how you want to approach it, then you can say to somebody, oh, I have this idea, or I'm thinking about approaching it this way. I'm thinking about representing it in a figure like this. What do you think about that? Does that tell you the thing that I'm trying to get you to know there, or could I do this differently? What are you thinking about it? Sometimes I just hit and workshop little aspects in between. And I think that style of feedback is essential to any form of communication, presentations included. Is that something that you've ever done before?
For me, no. But it's something I'm definitely taking to my supervisor for her to include when we have our lab meetings. Because what we do, what I've done is the way I practice for a presentation is I started off when I gave my first conference presentation, I had a script. And I would go through it and I'd misalign. Well, fuck. Got to go back to that line. Oh, shit. There's another one. Got to go back to that line. And I wouldn't say it was a disaster, but it felt like one. From my own internal perspective, it felt like one. So, all the ones I've done since then, the way I tend to work it is I have my PowerPoint and I can see it on the computer. There's my PowerPoint. And I'm just off the cuff. This is what I want to say. And our supervisor, God bless her, she will not let you do a presentation without having it go through the entire lab first, which is pretty good. I like the workshop idea a little bit better, so I'm going to bring that to her. But the problem I have is I never give the same presentation twice. It changes every single time I give it because I'll sit there and all of a sudden, you know what? That's the point I want to hit instead of that one.
That's a good sign of a presentation, I think. I think if even if you're giving the same thing scripted the same way, it's never going to be received as the same presentation by two different audiences. So your ability to play with that audience, that interplay, that sort of collaborative aspect of it, knowing what you want to hit on in that particular moment, what the audience seems to be responding to, that's a sign of an excellent presentation.
I'd say, I guess, kind of talking about that audience aspect. I know Ashley's kind of, talked to us about the audience of this podcast of, a lot of y'all that are listening are either students or, people that are trying to kind of get into this field, not necessarily in the field just yet, though if you are, please let us know. But like, what types of I guess experiences do you think you wish you would have known? Like, I'm trying to figure out how I wanted to word that, but like, I know when I was in undergrad or even in grad school, like watching people give presentations at conferences or even my teacher like lecturing at us, where I was like, oh my God, they're so smart. Like, they know what they're doing. But then, like, now kind of being in the field, listening to my friends now giving presentations. Of like kind of the anxiety before the presentation of like, oh, I don't want to mess up. I don't want to do these types of things. I guess just like to me, that helped me kind of put myself into that world of like, oh, other people are also kind of feeling this like feeling essentially for giving presentations, which is really nice to know that like you're not alone in that feeling. But I guess did y'all also feel that way? And has there been things that like helped alleviate that like kind of anxiety? I know I naturally have anxiety, so like probably only my medication will ever alleviate that for me. But like, what types of, I don't know, tips and tricks do you have to kind of like calm yourself down before a presentation or those types of things, I guess? And this is open-ended to anyone, but.
I do want to hear everyone's answers here, but I can distinctly remember an early presentation that I gave where I was shaking, like physically shaking while I was speaking, and I couldn't stop myself. It's just like a bodily reaction that I had no control over. I could do deep breathing, I could do whatever, and it just would not have helped the situation. So after that, I just realized, some things are out of my control. It's going to happen. Can I still deliver the information? Sure. So I'm going to focus on that. If I'm shaking, if I lose my train of thought, excuse me, if I have to cough in the middle of what I'm saying, things are going to happen and I'm just going to roll with it. So the more comfortable you feel rolling with things as they come up, the less of a problem they become. Because if you're just ready and you know that they're going to happen and you've accepted that they're going to happen, then it's easier to deal with. If you're trying to fight it constantly, it's a losing battle. And I think even the most seasoned presenters still get anxious. That's something that they may hide well, but never goes away. I know a lot of people personally who take beta blockers before a presentation. So medication is not out of the question. I get nervous. I sweat a lot. I have to specifically think about what outfit I'm going to wear because I have to plan for something that I will not sweat through in a manner that everyone can see. And actually, one of the ways that I do approach the anxiety of a presentation is I think about my outfit. I put a lot of effort into planning what I'm going to wear. How do I want to physically present myself? What sort of energy do I want to give off? And I put a lot of my time right before the presentation into that. And that keeps me away from, getting into the weeds about every little detail that I could do differently and getting super anxious about that. I am an anxious person by nature. So I know that if I can distract myself with something that's benefiting me in the end in the presentation, then I'm going to focus on those things. What about you guys?
My very first poster that I ever gave, my friend literally drugged me to the Q&A session to give it because I was so anxious. The answer was no, not going, just not going. It was the AABAs. I believe they were in Knoxville, but I'm not sure. I think it was in Knoxville. And my friend literally had to physically drag me there and hold me while I did the Q&A. Otherwise, it was not happening. But what really clicked for me, I kept getting anxious at conferences. As, no matter where it was, I was really, really anxious. And then it clicked a few years ago at an AAFS conference. And I was standing up there. And I kept saying to myself in my head, "You're on par with everyone in this room." Instead of thinking, "Oh my God, there's all these giants in the field right in front of me." No, you're on par with every single person in this room. Calm down, gave the presentation. And ever since then, that's how I do it, is I look at the audience. If it's my students, hey, they're looking at me to know this information, and you do know it, you can give it. If it's a conference, you're on par with everybody in this room. And that's how I deal with things. And that's really alleviated the anxiety that I have with conferences.
That's a great perspective.
Yeah, that imposter syndrome. I mean, we could probably have a whole nother 2 hour long podcast about imposter syndrome within the field for sure. But I get that of like having to remind yourself, like, you do know the stuff you're talking about. It's okay. And I also find for myself, and I obviously want to hear from Jenna too, but I just like before my brain forgets this, is like reminding myself that like not knowing an answer is okay too, because I know like for undergrad and even grad school, it was like a, you're defending your thesis. You have to know the answer to everything. Like you can't be caught not knowing, but like you can not know. Like, and like it's better to just say, I don't know the answer to that. Let me find out for you and I'll get back to you, rather than like making something up and being wrong. And like I know that's helped me a little bit with my presentations of just being able to say, I don't know. I really don't know the answer to that, and being okay with not knowing in that moment, at least.
That resonates with me for sure. One of my earlier presentations that I gave, I went through it fine, felt like really good about it. And then I got a question at the end, and the guy asked me about some very like minutia statistics thing that I just didn't know how to answer. And I sat there for a second. I thought about it, like, okay, what can I say about this? How am I gonna figure out a way to talk my way through this? And then I just said, forget it. I leaned into the microphone and I said, Google it. And end of question.
Google's the winner of all.
I love that. I don't know that I can directly speak to it. I haven't spoken at conferences. But even in my academic speaking, like when I'm giving a guest lecture or I'm like leading a lecture in a course of some format, the preparing my outfit is so real. The stress sweat is so abundant. So that is part of it is like that's re it reduces one extra piece of stress for me is if I don't have to worry that I'm sweating through my outfit, then it's like that's one because I'll just keep piling them on. Like my brain will just run 1,000 miles a minute and come up with absolutely every catastrophe that could ever possibly exist. So I try like that's one of the things is trying to let go of trying to control it. Like my brain will try to come up with everything that could go wrong so that I can control it in advance. And so trying to let go of that is a big one. But yeah, I think you have to work on your self-esteem a lot. Like getting to the point that Ashley is at where you can say I am on par with everyone. I don't know that I'm there yet. So that's something that I'm just still working on for myself, but it's definitely having heard it and knowing that it works, that would be something that I would try to implement.
That's definitely a goal. I don't know if you guys are as big of nerds as I am about these things, but in the more recent Marvel movies, they've approached the Hulk in the idea that he can control when he hulks out by saying that he's always angry, so he doesn't need to control his anger. He just sort of unleashes it at any given time. And I feel the same, except with anxiety. I am always anxious. But my ability to sort of control it and use it to my advantage is a sort of spin it as my enthusiasm or my passion about a subject. So if I'm anxious and I'm talking really fast and I know that I'm not going to be able to stop myself from doing that, then I'm going to use that to express my passion and my enthusiasm and use that as a way to get other people to be enthusiastic about the same thing. So I don't always feel on par with everyone else in the room. I would love to feel that. That's a goal for sure. But in the meantime, I feel like I can use my enthusiasm to at least engage people. And that's a way that I can sort of spin my anxiety to be something helpful rather than a hindrance.
No, I think that's fabulous. I guess just because I know we're probably about a half hour into this. I just kind of want to like open up for any like last minute questions or just like thoughts about scientific communication as a whole. As with all of these topics that we bring to this podcast, we could talk for hours upon hours. There are plenty of books written for all of these types of topics. But I guess one thing I was wondering is if there was any like resources, I guess, that like you found helped you become a better scientific communicator. I know for myself, Brown University has like a guide to science communication, something that like, talks about really briefly of like how to know your audience, how to say your message, how to, what medium you're using. And it gives a lot of good resources, but I didn't know if y'all had any resources that like you wanted to share for the audience, and we can obviously write all of this out in like the podcast descriptions as well. But that worked for you to become, the science communicator that you are.
I think one way I try to do it, mostly because I've only really spoken in educational settings, is because I feel like I learn a little bit differently. I try to cater to the way that I would want to be presented to. So if I would want something overly explained, or if I would want a lot of visuals, or Like, however, I just try to think about how I would want to learn and then try to implement that instead of trying to follow like a cookie cutter, like a set way, because we only, things only expand when we try to like push outside of it. And I just try to push to where I would want it pushed to. That's.
I think my focus has been through my media literacy training primarily rather than a specific resource. And there's, a ton of YouTube videos about this sort of thing. So it's not something that you need to read a book about or take a course on necessarily, although I would recommend if you ever get an opportunity to take a course on that. I think it's an extremely valuable part of any education. But understanding media literacy and the way that it can be presented from multiple different media can help you transform whatever version you're working in. You can learn from the tips and tricks from other media and bring it to your specific medium. And that's something that I've thought was extremely helpful. A former advisor gave me a book called Write Your Way to the Top. And that was something that he used a lot in writing his journal articles. He writes a ton of journal articles, so I do trust his opinion on those things. And that's helpful. But again, it is a little cookie cutter in thinking that you have to change your style of thinking, style of writing, style of communicating to fit one certain thing. Rather, I would take that as a guide or a suggestion, an outline, if you will, to put your own spin on. Not too cookie cutter.
Ashley, what would you say? You're a pretty beloved TA at the school. So how do you approach it?
Well, with all the lectures I've done recently as an instructor, the way I do it is I try to know my students. I try to, meaning I try to know my audience and put in a little bit of everything for everybody. So, and part of that is just like what you did, Jenna. I know me. I have issues myself, and I would like to, would I like to sit through this lecture? Would I like to sit through this presentation? Would I like to read this article? Most of the articles I write, I wouldn't want to read, but would I want to read this article? And that's how I try to write it. That's how I try to give the presentation. And what I find is the delivery is much more important than what's on the slide. The delivery is, how you write something is more important than what you're writing. The statistics and the materials and methods. Yes, you need to be sort of, if we did this and then we did this and then we did this and then we did this, but how you say it really changes the way it's received. And that's how I try to write things. That's how I try to give presentations.
No, I mean, that's, I guess that kind of, before we close out, I guess that kind of leads into that la one of my last questions that I kind of had for this topic was like, do y'all think that everyone within the field of anthropology, or even more specifically forensic anthropology, like, is it each of our jobs to be science communicators, or is it okay for like one person to be really good at it and like they kind of be the spokesperson? Or should we have like public not public officials, what's the word, public relations people that like do the outward facing stuff more? Or is it kind of on each of us to like work those muscles to be better science communicators? Like, what do y'all think?
Well, for me personally, I think it's a good idea to do both. We as scientists have to become better scientific communicators. We have to be able to relate to lay audiences, relate to our peers, relate to students. We have to be able to relate to a lot of different people. But at the same time, if you're in, say, an agency of some kind, and you have to communicate with the public, if there's somebody that is really, really, really good at that, let them do it. Just let them do it. That gets the anxiety off of you, and the information you want to convey is conveyed.
I can agree with that. I think we don't need to all be experts in everything, and there's going to be some people who are better at communicating than others. And it's a great idea to rely on them for that expertise, just as you rely on any other expert on a particular subject for anything else. But I do think there is a baseline level that everybody should be bringing to the table. And that I'm going to harp again on the literacy aspect of it. We really engage in scientific literacy in our field, and that's something that we expect a baseline level of from every scientist. But the media literacy aspect is something that we've really let go, and that's a muscle that we haven't worked. And that's one that we could really be bringing to everybody's attention to at least some degree. I was introduced to it in high school, and I think that's a great place to start to learn those things, because as you move into reading different resources, you not only need to learn how to communicate it, you need to learn how to digest it too. And those things go hand in hand. So if we're being taught that we need to parse through information to a certain level, we also need to be able to deliver that information to a certain level. And that's something I think across the board should be something we all work on, a muscle we all exercise.
Yeah, I'm somewhere in the middle, I suppose. I guess I think of, for all the Big Bang Theory people out there, I think of like the Sheldon Coopers of the world who are incredibly brilliant and have a lot to offer in terms of the research that they can conduct and the things that, like, the answers that they can come up with, but who are just not meant for every audience. And if maybe at some point we got to a place where it would be acceptable for a person to be that brilliant, and then have maybe someone translate it for them, like a trusted, like we have people who translate different languages. So if maybe you only speak science and that's all you can muster up, that you could find someone that you trust to be your media person who can translate it from science to media. And then like being okay with that kind of thing. Cause I guess I just wonder if the access, that's one of the things we didn't get into today, but in terms of science communication, one of the issues is access. And so if those brilliant souls out there that just can't communicate for the life of them, but can come up with really beautiful and like just groundbreaking things, if we could find a way to open doors in other ways, I don't know.
There is scientific journalism. I will plug the work that scientific journalists do here. I did that as part of my minor when I was in my undergrad, because I realized how important it was. And the role of a scientific journalist is to take science writing and to translate it for a general news audience. And I think that is such a valuable skill, such a valuable person to have to work with. And I learned that a lot of scientific journalists develop deep relationships with scientists in order to be that sort of translator. And that is just such a great relationship to be a part of. And I think something we should be relying on a lot more, because those people are experts in translating that exact thing.
Yeah, that's great. Like maybe every department someday would have one of those on their staff that could support the students that just can't, you know? I don't know. I would love that.
I mean, I bet the journalists would love the jobs too. So
yeah, let's all do it.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know if y'all have any last minute questions or comments that y'all want to kind of let our audience know. I know I just really wanted to thank Laura for joining us. And I mean, I know for sure giving me a lot to think about how I do science communication. And hopefully she kind of gave y'all as the audience as well some stuff to think about. But yeah, so any last minute remarks before we sign out.
I just want to say thank you so much for including me here. This was really fun. And I love talking about this. I'm always happy for the opportunity, and this was great. And if the audience ever has any questions or anything that they're interested in, I can give you contact information to share. I'm happy to continue this conversation off the air.
Perfect. Yeah. I know we have a email that you can email us at. Ashley, it's like the Bone Club something, right? What is it again? Sorry.
It's the Bone Club podcast at gmail.com.
Perfect. It's in all the bio stuff for where you ever clicked this podcast. But yeah, we can definitely add your contact, Laura, to this episode as well. So if they want to reach out to you and get, you know, pick your brain some more, they can do that. But yeah, I mean, I think that's really it for the Bone Club this episode. So,
yeah,
that is. Thank you so much, Laura.
Thank you.
I say, and I know, kind of along this same topic of science communication and getting that feedback, I mean, we're also willing to listen to feedback from the audience about what y'all like about our podcast, what you don't like about our podcast, topics that y'all want us to discuss. Because, you know, the last couple months, we've kind of just been talking about things that interested us and things that, like, you know, the conversation geared one way as we just chatted with each other. And we're like, oh, we should do that as another episode. But if y'all have any specific topics y'all want to discuss as well, just let us know in the emails. So
workshop with us.
Yeah. But I guess we're signing off.
Thank you all. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.